Raisha Pak of the National Governors Association. Thank you for joining us on health08.org.
Pleased to be here.
Your organization obviously has in it 50 state governors with probably as many opinions, 50 opinions. But is there a consensus when it comes to the problems of the healthcare system? What is the single most pressing problem? Uninsured, access, cost? Is there a consensus?
I would think so. I think they most come down on the cost side of the equation. And it's essentially because Medicaid has been growing 11% per year over the last 25 years. It's now 23%
of a state budget.
If you add state employees and other health care costs, it's probably a third of state budgets. So it essentially equals what you have in terms of education. And unfortunately, we're at the point now that the extra revenues either go into education or into health care, but they can't go into both. And so as we move forward right now, this continued cost increases of health care are putting a lot of pressure on education budgets.
And there has been so much activity at the state level in the past several years. Massachusetts, of course, the most prominent example, but other states in New England, California gave it a try. What do you see in the states as being most effective to tackle that issue you just described?
Well, I think the states that are trying to develop quality measures and get those to the public and trying to also move the health IT, electronic healthcare records and that type of thing, moving towards more transparency in terms of quality and price and getting that out to consumers. I think there is a lot of experimentation in that particular area, and I think we are beginning to see some positive results.
In what ways?
In terms of slower rate of increase of costs. This is a long-run effort, so it's going to be some time before we see results we can really depend upon. But I think some of the states are feeling good about some of the things they've seen so far in terms of costs.
For the uninitiated in our audience, not necessarily the health policy audience, but quality, identifying quality measures, how does that lead to cost saving?
Well, essentially what will happen is that you develop quality measures and for hospitals and so on, or nursing homes, and then you get them to report that information, and essentially you put it on the website. So when people are looking around for where to go, which hospital to go, and you've got one that has a quality rating of A and you've got another one that's a C, essentially they'll move towards the quality. Now, to really get the cost effectiveness, though, you've got to combine price transparency. So you'll see some states now moving so that you can essentially bring up information on the quality of the hospital and also information on particular procedures. So if people are going in for a heart bypass or something, you may get the average cost of a hospital for that. So it's a combination, really, of the price information around particular procedures and so on with the quality measures where I think we're beginning to see some traction in terms of cost.
And that would impact consumers who have private insurance, but how would it, what efforts are you seeing in terms of Medicaid on the ground that's helping?
Well, there I think most of the work so far has been in the pharmaceutical area where they've used formularies in, you know, basically negotiating with drug companies around a particular drug and then also with respect to generics. So that's been helpful. The other thing that is states are really working a lot on is disease management. I mean, we all know that there are seven or eight diseases that end up spending 65-70% of the money, so that if you can become more efficient in diabetes treatment and those things. So there's been a lot of work there where you set up with nurses and so on, calling individual patients to make sure they come in for the treatment. So that's been a very hopeful component of it as well.
Talk to me for a moment about the current tension between the governors and the federal government in terms of what the Bush administration wants done with Medicaid and how that impacts what we've been discussing.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that's happened historically is that there's pushing and shoving, in all honesty, where states attempt to push some of the costs back to the federal government, and the federal government pushes it essentially back to the states. And so there's been a group of about 7 regulations that have been promulgated that essentially do cost shifting back to states. I mean, some of them involve how you can raise revenues. A lot of times states have done provider taxes, and so the administration has certain requirements on actually how you do provider taxes. And they think if they restrict that, then states will have to come back on their benefit levels or eligibility or that type of thing. So I will say that this has gone on for a good 20, 25 years. But more recently, I think that this group of 7 regulations that the administration has come out has been a pretty major shift. It's like $15 billion over 5 years, which would be difficult at any time. But clearly, when you've got states having major economic shortfalls in terms of revenues and so on, it's much more difficult right now. So that's why we've been pushing the Congress to pass moratoriums so that we have some time to work out these issues. We know that there are some legitimate issues there, but we all have to sit down and talk them through and see whether we can't resolve them.
And I should say that the Bush administration's argument is that there is some bookkeeping done at the state level that pushes an unfair amount of the cost onto the federal government.
That's right. That deals with a lot of the so-called provider taxes. They think there's sort of recycling of dollars. We've dealt with that, we believe. I mean, there's essentially was a law 8 or 10 years ago, and then there was other regulations that we negotiated. I can't argue that we're 100% with clean hands, in all honesty, but any major in terms of recycling, I think, is over at this point.
What are the unique obstacles towards reaching some kind of consensus on Medicaid in the environment you've just described with the current issues on the table?
In terms of states themselves
working
together?
Well, the states at the table with the federal government.
Well, I think where states come from is that they want more flexibility really around the program. They want to actually be able to set the benefit package, not have the federal government essentially set it. They like more control over the eligibility of people, more control over the pharmacy and so on. So what you find is that the federal government wants a relatively robust benefit package. And a lot of times the Medicaid benefit package is more robust than you see in the private sector. Now, there is a problem in terms of getting physicians to essentially do the care and so on. The other huge problem in Medicaid is the so-called dual-eligible population. These are people who are eligible for both Medicare and Medicaid, which represents about 60% of the cost of the Medicaid program. That's an awful situation. People don't know where to go if there's a problem because you've got 2 levels of government into it. So I think that's something that overlapping jurisdiction should be eliminated over a period of time. Plus, the other area is huge is long-term care. We have no real long-term care policy in this country, and therefore more and more the elderly are ending up in nursing homes and are part of Medicaid. So that's going to continue to grow very, very rapidly. So it's an area where the federal government, I think, has to take over more responsibility.
Well, that leads me to my next question, which is if you could give me a sense of priorities that the Governors Association has, particularly when we look to 2009 and a new administration, whoever the president may be. But what are the sense of priorities about these health care issues and what the governors would like to see done at the federal level?
Well, the first two would be developing a good long-term care policy. That's probably going to require a new revenue source, unfortunately. But it seems to me that you need a continuum, that once people become 65 and end up in a program, they should not, at some later level when they're 75 and run out of money, end up in partly a state program and partly a federal program. So I would say cleaning up that so that once people enter Medicare throughout the rest of their lives. They're in one particular program. So that dual eligible problem is huge. The others are, I would say, a lot around the flexibility, really, of running the rest of the Medicaid program. And then if, in fact, we're into broader healthcare reform, then I think it's a matter of who runs the program and how much flexibility do you have around it. States have experimented a lot, have done a lot over the last 10 years. They have a lot of expertise now to bring to the table. I'm assuming that it's going to be a state-run program if it's, in fact, more of a comprehensive program, that they will not follow a federal Medicare approach, that it will be state-administered. If that's true, then I think states would want a lot of flexibility on how they set up their alliances in terms of matching providers to new people coming onto the rolls, so that they're able to tailor the programs more closely to the needs of their citizens.
You have been in Washington for a while. You've heard the healthcare debate more than once. We're in the middle of a presidential campaign now. What is your take on how serious a debate it is in terms of it leading to some action?
Well, it's interesting. You know, the last time before President Clinton came in, there was a lot of experimentation in the states. And it all stopped as the pendulum swung to Washington. And, of course, they failed to do it in Washington. I would say from the state perspective, there's not a lot of people who believe that Washington, D.C. is going to really get it done this time. And I think our view is that they probably should do it incrementally rather than try and do one big domestic sweeping program. And really what the federal government needs to do is to set the foundation so that the states can move. And the foundation, I think, is what are the health, electronic health care records, what are the requirements there, what are the standards in quality, what are the standards, are we going to have price transparency. But to set that foundation forward and perhaps provide states with some funding for other low-income programs and let the states move forward and try to implement it.
Why is there not a lot of hope among the governors that Washington will move?
Well, I'll be honest with you that Washington has become quite partisan lately, and that you really got to have more than a 51-49 vote in the Senate. You've really got to have a very strong consensus to move it. And the two parties seem to be very, very far apart on health care. The other thing, of course, is that the deficit is getting dramatically larger. And I would think that the next time CBO does an update because of the slowdown in the economy, that the deficit will probably be up by $100 billion or so, which means you're probably looking at a deficit of $500 to $600 billion. To bring in health care that may cost another $100 to $200 billion on top of that, it's just going to be very, very difficult to do.
And that actually is what some lawmakers on the Hill already are beginning to put out there. They're beginning to tamp down the expectations of really how significant a change there could be.
That's right. That's right. That's why I fall back on there's a number of things that I think they can do.
Incrementally.
Mm-hmm. Setting the foundation and also eliminating some of what I think are the big problems. This dual-eligible population we talked about. Also the tax treatment. I mean, you know, if you're working for an employer that provides health care, it's entirely exempt from you from paying taxes. But another individual has to pay out of pocket because the employer doesn't. There's no equality in the tax treatment around health care. So there's a number of areas that they could clean up efficiencies or inequities that would be part of that foundation that then would allow states to move forward.
Okay. I have one final question for you. What do you think is the next big idea at the state level, looking down the road 3 or 4 years, in terms of harnessing these healthcare issues? Is there something out there that we haven't tried yet, but you're beginning to hear inklings about?
Not really. I mean, I think it is on the cost control side that I think it's a matter of how do you bring all the pieces together? How do you really Most of the work, for example, on electronic healthcare records has been at the regional level. We've had some states do a lot, but no state, for example, has really created the entire system. I mean, Minnesota and some other states are close. So I guess that would be one area where they would actually integrate the quality standards and everything into the health IT. One of the things that people don't realize in that area is that it will also lead to a lot more analysis around appropriate medical treatment, evidence-based. The data that we use now is pretty splintered, and so with electronic healthcare records, you'll be able to do a lot more analysis on effectiveness, which should lead to reduced cost over time.
Okay, thank you so much, Ray Shapak of the National Governors Association.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
It.